And welcome to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast Wednesday webcast. We're back during lockdown, and I am with you, Scott Cass and Rennie, and our courts. And before we go into the webcast, obviously our special guest is Stuart. Literally, I keep on saying that literally on all the stuff that I feel on social media. Literally, special guest is Stuart Guest. So hi, Stuart.
Hi.
We're going to come back to you in a minute, but Al's got a special message first, haven't you, Al?
Yes, in 1 minute. We are putting together a little conference for social work practitioners in relation to managing and supporting violent and aggressive behaviour in adoptive and special guardianship and fostering homes. And we're inviting you to. It's going to be 9:30 to 12:30, 1 o'clock on the 12th of March. It's all going to be pre-recorded and then available afterwards. We're going to be talking really specifically about the impact of that behaviour on families and carers. We're going to be talking about how to support families and carers and give some really practical strategies to develop people's understanding, but also how to work and, you know, how to help, really. So it's going to be all very interactive, very supportive, very good. And CPD hours are available. If you go onto our Facebook page or onto our Twitter feed, there will be an advert there and you can follow the link. It's £25 per person. If you buy 5 tickets, you get 4 free. There's a special price for couples. Parents and carers are all invited. And that's it. Boom, get out of here. I should be an information. I should do QVC or that, shouldn't I?
If you got the prices right, it's buy 5 for the price of 4. That's it, not 5 and you get four free.
Yeah, but the 5 cost. Yeah, but the 5 cost the same as the price of 4. Anyway, that's, I'm really messing it up now.
Have another drink of your Tennent special or whatever it is.
Tennent, it's diet Pepsi. It's Pepsi Maxi.
Anyway, friend of the show, because anybody who comes back, we call a friend of the show, Stuart Guest. It's been a long, long time. Actually, I was looking at my messages the other day when I messaged you, and I was like, oh, it was 2017 when you were last on the podcast.
No. Yes,
2017.
It was just after the conference, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah. So welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
For coming on. And obviously, we just had a chat beforehand because I was going, why are we doing this? And we've decided to bring the webcast back on a Wednesday during lockdown, at least. We might go further than that. But as ever, free and available afterwards. And we invited you along because, obviously, education is, I want to use the word nightmare. I'd say it's a nightmare for everybody, for schools, for parents, for kids, the whole jing bang. So I guess we'll crack on. And my first question to you would be, how are you doing as a head teacher, adoptive parent?
Yeah, that's a whole podcast in itself.
Well, let's start with the head teacher element of it. I just think everyone has just been in such turmoil over the last sort of, since March, really, isn't it? From a head teacher's perspective, we've just been waiting on announcements. And we get them exactly the same time as everybody else. We get no advance warning of anything. And then we just have to just go, okay, what needs to happen? So it's been really tricky as a profession. Staff are working exceptionally hard across the education sector, pulling things together very quickly to try to deliver government policy and get kids into school that need to be in school, and to keep as many kids at home to protect the effort to reduce this blasted virus so we can get back to some sense of normality. But it's been tough, but that's what we do in this profession. We step up and we do what we can.
Yeah, and it must be hard because, you know, you do literally, I mean, I've seen lots of stuff on social media, you know, you've literally been told at 9, 10 at night maybe?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
About
I mean,
changes the next day and stuff like that. I mean, is it like that?
It's absolutely like that. So if you imagine the last announcement, you know, Monday, lots of children were in school. Monday night, 8 o'clock, we get the announcement. Yeah. 5 to 11, we get a bit of guidance come through on email.
Right. So
we're expected to sort that for Tuesday.
And I mean, that must have been hard for the kids as well. You know, they came back to school after the Christmas holidays for one day. And, you know, I mean, you could debate whether that was the right thing to do or not. But, you know, the exposure to potential kind of the virus in that one day is quite huge as well, isn't it? You know, I mean,
absolutely. For those schools that did open on that Monday, they didn't have a training day. you know, and lots did open, you know. Yeah, you're right, absolutely. That worry then, knowing, you know, of the extra transmission that we got with this new strain, it could be very scary for parents, for kids, for teachers. You know, luckily for my school, we weren't open on that Monday anyway,
right?
So we didn't have any children, so you know, that gave us the heads up there.
Yeah. And what about you and the great Mrs. G and family? How are you dealing through all this?
Yeah, it's up and down. You know, when you've got kids with some additional needs, it is challenging. But up and down. But we've tried. The first lockdown actually was pretty all right for us, because we got, everything was new, wasn't it? So we got new. You got the routines together. You got a bit of remote learning. Remote learning wasn't as intense as it is now this time round.
Yes,
right.
Because schools didn't really have a handle on it, so it was not quite as strong. So and we managed to have. It was the summer as well, wasn't it? So you know.
Yeah.
At dinner time, they could go and have a run around and release some of that energy. Now this. It's a lot tougher. We've got,
it's not good, is it?
Schools are onto it now. We've got government policy saying we need to do 3 hours at Key Stage 1, 4 hours at Key Stage 2, 5 hours at Key Stage 3 and 4, of that amount of learning. So the pressure is there on parents. Yeah. And it's hard, it's darker, it's colder, we can't get out as much.
Yeah, it's bleak. So,
I think we're all feeling that. I'd be perfectly honest. I mean, first lockdown, I was actually out at work, so it was great because I was out of the house. But this one, I'm not. And, it's, you know, there's five of us, you know, and I tell you, we went out for half an hour today and we were like, yay, just gone to the shop.
Wow. I know. That's one of the things we've tried to do. So when I get home from work, I'm obviously in school.
Yeah.
When I get home, obviously Mrs. G's had the three here, trying to do three different levels of remote learning and live lessons and all that. So I've got the easy job going to school. So we then have tea, and then we go off for a walk. We all go for a walk because you've got to get out.
Yeah. So just a quick question about the school then. Have you noticed a difference in terms of the numbers of children who are in school now compared to the first lockdown? Or has that not changed?
Oh, no, it's hugely different. Hugely different. Wow. I think at the first lockdown, everyone was like, what is going on? This is ridiculously scary. There wasn't PPE. We'd never heard of PPE, had we? We didn't really know, unless you were in that sort of industry. So everybody just hibernated, really. And we actually had no parents needing us to provide provision.
Oh, wow. Okay.
None. They all managed to sort it out because nobody wanted their kids really to go into school.
Yeah.
This time, we've got around 45.
Right. Okay. Wow.
Very different. But I think that's mainly to do with the list of critical workers seems to be a lot broader.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The vulnerability lists are broader. You know, the government said if you don't have an effective place to do your home learning, then you could be in school.
So you can see why there's a big difference now in schools who have a lot of vulnerable children, and why the number, why they're having to refuse to have children back, because they just can't, they can't facilitate those numbers, can they?
Absolutely. I mean, we've got so many more critical workers, but also we're asking for more and more of our vulnerables to come in.
Right.
Because the first time it was about hibernating, staying safe. Now this is third lockdown, second lockdown where schools are closed.
Yeah.
We're layering on the vulnerabilities of our most vulnerable children. So, you know, we're quite happy to say the key targeted ones, we're inviting them in, say, come on, it's okay, we can accommodate.
Yeah.
If they want it, they don't, you know, they don't all want that.
Can force them,
I was thinking, because Scott's just asked loads of questions, but my little mind's been ticking away.
Yeah, sorry.
That's fine.
Makes a change for us to be that way around.
It does, doesn't it? No, you'll need to lie down later. I was thinking, like, if this was a year ago, we'd have been having a conversation about the vulnerable children in your school, and you'd highlight specific children with specific vulnerabilities. A year later, what does that vulnerability look like? Have their new vulnerabilities appeared? And what's the kind of the temperature, the emotional temperature amongst that community now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think because of the way we run our school, so we are a very caring school, we're a very therapeutic school. So we deal with children all the time in a way that enables them to talk to us, to get the support they need all the time. So when they came back in September fully after the first one, on the whole, they settled back really quickly because we'd kept the check-ins, the phone calls, the Zooms, all of those things, a lot of emphasis on our vulnerable children during the first lockdown and over the summer holidays as well, meaning that those connections were still there. So it didn't quite feel such a break, which could happen. But what we did have, we had to deal with children that had suffered loss and bereavement over that time.
Of course,
you know. That, and the biggest thing that we noticed was the with lack of fitness and the weight gain of children. It's a huge amount. So, you know, there was we had to get lots of sort of fit clubs getting going and targeted groups because, you know, some kids were struggling to walk down the drive into school.
Wow.
You could see it. So, and that's the vulnerabilities of some families as well. But they were doing really well. They were doing really well. But obviously, we've now got the next hit. But I've got a huge pastoral team. So we're doing, you know, the regular check-ins, the deliveries round to the homes with food and all that sort of stuff. So because we've got our system set up, hopefully this isn't going to be too long as well. We can get them back in. But obviously, you've got the worries about learning as well with some of our families.
So. Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. There's a question here. I'll pop it up on the screen. I'll read it out to you. Interested to know, for those children that aren't coming into school other than the potential online Zoom classes, what's been done to help children maintain a relationship and connection with their teacher? Is it one-to-ones or just big groups?
It's completely bespoke to the individual children and the classes. So we do have phone calls. We do have one-to-one Zoom sessions, which is a wellbeing session. So my learning mentors will do some one-to-one Zoom sessions like they would do their mentoring in school with a child. They will do it over Zoom. So that we just carry on because, again, the children need that continuity and that relationship building. So there is the whole mix of that. And, you know, some of our teachers pop round to deliver one of the packs to some of the children this week. And she said the child came to the door and, you know, they had that conversation. Yeah, social distance, end of the drive. But just that level of connection. And I try to, you know, I'm reading a story to just recorded a story every couple of days, a chapter. And I'm posting that on Class Dojo. So there's that connection. Every Monday morning we do a whole school assembly. Mm-hmm. So there's that interaction as well. So we're trying to keep the sort of the main bits going and just fun things. I joined a year four online lesson doing the spelling challenges this morning and having a bit of fun. Just fun.
Did you lose?
Just trying to keep the fun going. I came sixth.
I think it's one thing to know. I mean, your school, and you know, it's got a really good reputation in that respect, hasn't it? Because of the work that you're doing, and not all schools are the same. You know, I mean, you're talking about food there, and you know, we've seen on social media the last 48 hours, some of the excuses for food packages that have gone out to families from really responsible kind of, you know, multinational companies. It's just ridiculous. So, I mean, I'm not asking you to compare yourself, but do you think that this is, that your examples that you're given are kind of the majority or are they quite a minority?
I think they are the majority. I think a lot of schools are doing a huge amount to support the children, well above and beyond that we'd ever be expected to do. But obviously for school, or get a company to deliver that on their behalf, and then it's rubbish, then that's down to the school then to say it's rubbish and you know, have a go. And I imagine they are doing that. I imagine they'd be disgusted by what we've seen on social media in terms of the food. But we've also got to remember, we've only today been given the National Free School Meal voucher information to move forward. Yeah. And what we're at middle of week two.
Yeah.
So schools have had to scrabble around trying to do what they can. And it's really, really difficult.
And I think that's one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on, because, you know, we need to hear from the horse's mouth rather than what we read on social media sometimes about why this happens, you know. So let's focus in a little bit on parents and their little angels. Because let's face it, it applies to everybody, you know, whether you've adopted or fostered or whether you've got your own birth children. I mean, this is tough shizzle.
Really, it really is. Remote learning is an absolute nightmare because, you know, even you know, it is a nightmare. I put in my newsletter last week, you know, respect to the children, respect to the parents, respect to the teachers, because everyone is having to step up and do things that they've never done before. For parents, home learning is just so difficult. One, you don't always know what on earth you're on about and what the teachers are on about.
Yeah.
You know, the language that's associated in education, even at primary level, is so complex.
Yeah.
You know, what do you mean you don't know an adverbial phrase or a pre? What is all this nonsense? It's the nonsense, unfortunately, we have to teach a lot of the time. But parents won't have a clue often about that. And when even those that do have a clue, when you're trying to teach your own child, that is very different to a teacher teaching your child, because they don't want to listen to you because you're the parent. Yeah. I think we've got to acknowledge it's really difficult. And these schools that are sort of, I've heard a few schools giving detentions for children not completing the work.
What?
What are you doing? I think we have to just acknowledge it's really hard, and parents will do the best they can. Children will do the best they can, and if they don't submit that work by 3 p.m. on a certain day, we're then tough, because actually lots of families are dealing with a lot of other stuff at the moment, and it's really hard. But there are some things that I would say parents can do to sort of make it a bit easier.
There's a couple of things I want to pick up on there. One is, I saw on Twitter today somebody had to Google what a noun was, because they didn't know what it was. And that would be me. That would be me, to be fair. I mean, you know, I'm not a teacher. I don't know. The second thing is, I'm loving the remote learning or home learning thing, because we've been using homeschooling as a term, and I think that's a permanent choice.
Yes, that's different. That's completely different.
Yeah, it is completely different. But I feel like too many professionals are also using the phrase homeschooling as well. But it's, you know, I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, we can't homeschool, because this is, like you say, remote learning. In the same way we are now having remote meetings for work and virtual meetings and stuff like that. So it's virtual learning, it's home learning. So I love that phrase. And, you know, just what you've said there, you know, just to put it into some context as well, I needed the office for 2 hours yesterday. So therefore, Jacob wasn't able to log in for school, because we have two computers, but he'd forgotten his password for the other one. So, but I needed it because that's paid work. I need to get a salary as well.
Yeah. So,
you know, I needed that computer. And this is literally how
the stuff of life
families are. It is, isn't it? You know,
and schools have to respect that is a real challenge, and the expectation that you will be live on a live lesson, have a computer, because that's how we deliver remote learning. And if you haven't got it, you haven't got it.
Exactly,
it is a challenge. You know, my allocation of laptops from the Department for Education went from 28 to 2. They cut it.
I saw that. I did see that when that happened.
Diabolical. I mean, I did argue it, and I got my 28. But we've ordered 300 iPads that are coming next week. So every single child from probably just over a week's time, every single child in years 1 to 5 will have a brand new iPad delivered to their home or picked up so they can do remote learning with no barriers. And then we've got some of the older ones that all of year six will have and all of reception and nursery will have. So what we have to do, we have to do whatever we can to eliminate that digital divide. So you, Scott, you don't have that issue then. That your child will have their own device that's got everything already loaded onto it, that's controlled. But that's not available in all schools. Not every school can do that. We've been planning this for a year, just over a year.
But it raises lots of questions about the logistics of that. But can I take you back a little bit before that? Because even before we get to the education stuff, you know, putting my, you know, corduroy wearing, man bag slinging, social work head on, when we talk about the needs of children, for some children, education is just not even on the, it doesn't even get on the list anymore. This at this time, when we talk about, you know, we talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs and safety, you know, some children just must be genuinely terrified, and then we're in and or maybe even their parents are terrified or shielding, and then we're sort of trying to, I'm not saying you personally, but as a society, we're going, and then in the midst of all that, while you're generally freaked out, you've got to now do your learn about nouns and verbs and dojos and whatever things. Are you? Is there any scope for you as an educator, you know, as a professional, to kind of go, actually, that doesn't, that family can just cut some slack there and just be safe.
Absolutely, 100%. So if we spot we track children that have been involved in remote learning, it's not engaged or not submitted anything, we will ring the parent. It's not a phone call to say why haven't they engaged. It's a phone call to say everything all right, how are things. It's a flag for us to do something. And they might say, well, actually, this person's died or this has happened. Or we go, that's absolutely fine. We know you're off grid for a week. We'll give you a call in a week, see how you're getting on. That's compassion. And that's, you know, learning goes out the window. We can pick that up. You've got to be compassionate. But I sort of disagree with you a bit, Al, in terms of the edge. I know, it's shocking.
Coming on my podcast. Disagreeing with me, right?
Come on.
In terms of the children's well-being, for some, keeping that learning going, even though it's not a priority, keeps them regularly connected with education, and they know it, you know, and it's a
structure and a pillar in their lives, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Al, I'm going to go against you as well, because, you know, listening to Jacob the last 2 days doing home learning on the computer, I've heard him giggle, I've heard him swearing at the screen, you know, but I've heard a nice side of my son. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's abstract because it's not at school, but now I can see why he's nearly been suspended a couple of times. But I've heard him laugh. I've heard him giggle. I've heard him have interaction with people. And that's something I don't see, because obviously I don't go to school. So to see it is actually quite nice. But also for him, you know, he may have missed a couple of lessons the last 2 days because he's been what we would have called in Scotland, ticking it. He's ticked his lessons, three of them, but we found out about it. And but the ones he has engaged with, he's been, you know, he's literally sat there and glued to it, and he's been saying the answer and all that sort of stuff. So I kind of agree with that. I think that, you know, when, if you can get them to, then let them. Would be my thing as well.
But it's also, well, I always say this about lots of things with schools, it's not the parents' fight with the child.
No.
It's down to the school. If the school is setting the work and the child isn't doing it, that's a battle between them, particularly at secondary school. That's a battle between the child and the school. You know, you can't do it that it damages the parent-child relationship at that point. You can provide the nurture, the care, the equipment, the space, the encouragement, all of that. But ultimately, they don't do it, then the consequence will come from school, not from home.
Yeah. Because I know you've got a teenage daughter, haven't you? You've got teenage children and younger children as well. So are you seeing a difference between the needs and kind of how it's working out between the two?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for my eldest, who's GCSE year, Really challenging. I mean, this has just been a very, very tough year for all those people in years 11 and 13. They're not knowing where they're going. So I think it depends on each child, doesn't it? You know, she finds it tricky doing the remote learning. It just doesn't, the live bits.
It's really,
really hard. But she works well doing the revision side of things. So I think it's, each child is so different. This is the problem with one size fits all. It doesn't. So you have to sort of really engage with the schools to say, do you know what? My child finds this difficult. And actually, can we do this instead? And that would be one of my top tips, really, is to sort of liaise with the school, because you know your kids best. You know what difficulties they have. You know their capacity to work during the day and the types of work they will and won't do. And it's liaising with school and being honest with them, saying, look, they're finding this really, really hard. So it might be they only do a tiny bit of that work, but we'll try to do more on this.
I found with my daughter's 15, so she's year 10, yeah, one of my daughters. And she, I don't know, they keep changing it. Well, they keep changing it, don't they, children? That's the thing. If they would just stay still for a couple of years, we could catch up. But I was really conscious, because I'm into a little bit of child development, that as a teenage girl, this is the time of her life where she's kind of naturally separating from the family. That's an appropriate developmental stage that she moves on. Mm. She pairs off from us a bit, and she's just not been able to do that. And I can see that the first lockdown, she was like a caged animal. She just was, but this one, she's just kind of got on with it. And it's just really interesting to see how she's, but also that reflects the fact that she's now doing stuff that she chose. So it's, which is really interesting. So I was reading or listening to a report about saying that actually for sort of those, that age group, they're saying that's probably those that are experiencing the hardest, because they're the least likely to die and probably the feel the most restricted.
They're also the most likely to pass it on.
Yeah.
Bless them. That wasn't a question, really, was it? That was rubbish.
Obviously, because we're not answering.
Just your awkward silence. Just talk amongst yourselves.
So, Stuart, you did a bit of homework. You did a bit of preparation for this tonight. You've got five top tips as well, haven't you? Which we're gonna link to, because you're gonna put it out on your blog, aren't you? Which, to be honest, you should have done last year when this all kicked off. You should have been.
Come on.
You know, you missed a trick.
I did. I wrote a huge, huge blog, but I just didn't get around to publishing it.
Fair enough.
And then things changed. It was out of date, so I thought.
I was going to say. But we know where we are. I think the thing is, once you've experienced something once, and you know, proof is in the pudding, really, that schools are really on it this time, aren't they? So, go on, rattle through your top five, but pause after each one so we can ask you questions and probe you a little bit.
And we do have some questions for the end as well, so we've got to leave a few minutes, because there's questions are starting to roll in now. So we've got to make sure we have some time at the end.
Yeah. I think my first one, wherever possible, build your routine for remote learning around well-being for the child and yours. So things like, make sure there's the sensory breaks in there. Make sure you put exercise as part of that learning. Make sure there's time that your child can connect with their friends as part of that day. So all the things that we know that support well-being aren't ad hoc, they're actually part of that timetable day as much as possible. So that would be my first top tip, really, on that. So.
And I think what's interesting about that one as well, because we talked about it yesterday in a meeting that Al and I were in, was about parents' mental health as well. Because, you know, we're trying to get our kids to do all this stuff, and I'm not taking away from, you know, the well-being of children, of course I'm not. But actually, we need to also be looking after ourselves. And, you know, we've touched on the stresses that education... Well, we know, you know, we all know, because we've talked about it for years, about the stresses of education for parents. And in this situation as well, you know, we're increasing the intensity of anxiety and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And it can have an impact. So I think that's a really appropriate number one. So tick.
Tick. Do you want my number two? Number two.
Yeah, go on.
Number two.
Like, I would know any better, but you know.
We sort of touched on it, but liaise with school to agree what your children will and won't be doing as part of remote learning. Okay. So, and I think that's really important. Hopefully you've got a good relationship with at least somebody in the school, but just make it explicitly clear what they will and won't be doing, because it takes the pressure off then, and those teachers won't then be chasing. If they know that you're going to do your best to get bits in, then it just takes the pressure off for everyone. Okay. So, liaise with the school, that would be number two.
Yeah.
My number three would be reduce any new stressors, because we know that children will struggle with emotional regulation when the stress is in there. And there's all these new stressors that we might not know about with our children unless we're asking them. So, you know, it might be you say, right, how do you feel about Zoom lessons? You know, the scale 1 to 10 or red, amber, green. How does that make you feel? Well, the red. Okay. Why? Why is Zoom lessons so difficult? Well, I really don't like it when I can see myself in the camera or whatever. Okay, what could we do? Okay. Well, we could contact the teacher to say, can we have the camera off because that's causing you anxiety? Fine, let's sort that one. And, you know, you chip away, you find out all those different stressors and you try to reduce them by either doing stuff yourself or liaising with the school. Because we won't, unless we're asking the children, we won't necessarily know what is stressing them out about remote learning. And it might be simple things that we can do. So that would be my number three, reduce the stressors.
And that's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I don't think we think about whether children can deal with seeing themselves on screen and stuff like that. I mean, that's actually a new one that I didn't think about. So
there's quite a lot of evidence on it that actually the fatigue you get from being on Zooms is really hard, emotionally hard. And like some schools are doing like an hour Zoom lessons, an hour and a half Zoom lessons. But I've seen some schools are saying, well, actually, we've taken it from an hour to 45 minutes to allow that screen break.
Yeah.
You know, so we've got to be careful that we don't overdo it.
Yeah.
That's really good, isn't it? Because I think that we initially just took what we did and we just did it online. And it's a different medium altogether, isn't it? It's got its own uniquenesses, and you know, like you can read a class. I'm sure you can read a classroom and go, "Oh, that kid's not is struggling, or that kid is not happy in that corner, for whatever reason."
Yeah.
That maybe isn't available to a teacher, so they're not able to identify, are they, through a screen? They just have no way of knowing. So it is again as a parent to kind of just be savvier to that and switch into that.
Mm.
Well done.
Yeah.
We'll give you that point.
Not that he needs any validation from us that he's doing the right thing, to be fair, but, you know, yeah.
Got number four?
Go on, yeah. I'm excited for number four. They're all creeping up there. They're getting better as we go on.
I didn't rank them, to be fair. for the grown-ups to acknowledge their own stresses and worries and to make sure that they have got the self-care put in. As much as possible. I know it's really hard to put self-care in when you're stuck in the house and you've got all your kids, but wherever you can. And I've put in brackets, not always wine and chocolate. And
what are you talking about, Willis?
And I said that to my wife a bit earlier, and she went, "Hot kettle." as I sit here with my bedtime tipple.
God. Like creme
not
de
menthe. Always.
Yes, no,
absolutely. You know, it's port. It's a nice vegan port.
Oh yes, of course, yes. Yeah, we might touch on that in the end, actually.
Okay. Vegan port.
Fabulous.
Exercise, if you can, healthy eating, all that is so important as grown-ups. We've started batch cooking now on a Sunday, so that the meals on the evenings are a lot quicker. So that works for us. And the final one, the fifth one for me, is, now this is contentious. My wife didn't agree with this one. It's an interesting one. Take a day off if you need to.
I agree with it. It's just, how do you do it?
Well, in terms of, this was her point. Well, but they'll have to catch up with the work the next day, et cetera, et cetera. But as I'd say, sometimes kids are ill and they don't go to school.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it's all getting a bit overwhelming, you know, mental health wise, yeah, then, you know, take a pause for only for a day or half a day, you know, call it a snow day, an inset day, call it what you want. Sometimes you do have to just go and do something different.
Yeah, and I guess that strikes back to what I was saying there about, you know, last time when we did this, it was just like we put everything online and we didn't think about the fatigue and the breaks and all that sort of stuff. And I guess this is very similar. You know, yesterday I did 2 hours, and sorry, first world problems, because I'm not doing too many Zoom meetings at the minute. I did 2 hours on a Teams meeting. Can I just say Microsoft Teams, if anybody uses them, they're rubbish. But anyway, I actually had a headache at the end of it because I'd spent 3 hours with something else I'd done the hour before, and I actually had a headache. And I'm constantly saying, Jacob, have you got your glasses on? Have you got light on? Have you, you know, da 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 da? Because actually, it's so different for them. And I think that's a really good point. That yes, we might have a sick day or we might have an inset day or something, but you know, if kids really are getting to the point of, you know, escalating, especially our children who do get to that point where you know that they're just going to pop, you've taken the stress out of them having to be in the physical classroom, but actually there will come a time where it gets too much for them. And if it does, then we need to be ready to say, okay, so you're going to have the afternoon off, or we're not going to make you do that tomorrow, and we're going to ring you in sick, or, you know, however it works. I think that's a really good point. I was ready to agree with Mrs. G, but I think you've made a point there.
So. I convinced you.
Yeah.
Can I just, because those are great ones, I think the one that really resonated was the one around, you mentioned children not happy seeing themselves, and lots of comments immediately came through. Some people happy to see themselves, lots of young people not. And also, but parents having been a little bit anxious about seeing lots of children on screens and screenshotting and kind of, that's a whole new world for us all.
It is. Some schools have the policy that you don't have the cameras on. Some schools say you have to have it on because it's all very different.
I worried this morning when I walked through into the office about 11:30 with my dressing gown on and my nightie, and I was like, oh, has he got the camera on? he didn't. Just to be clear.
But I mean, I've done training, and I did training to a group of people there was about 30 of them, and none of them would come on screen for whatever reason. I can't make people come on screen, and I found that really actually torturous. However, so from a teacher point of view, we've not even talked about the welfare of teachers. We're not here to feel sorry for teachers, but we've got to acknowledge that this must be incredibly difficult for teachers. Because there, you know, this time last year it was just full steam ahead, and now the whole world has changed.
It's a different profession now, and I don't think it. I hope it won't go back to the profession it was before. I think we're going to be a lot stronger as a profession, pushing against policies that aren't in the best interest of children. That's another podcast. That's something completely separate.
Well,
I'll make a note.
Do you think that in some ways there's been some remarkable events this year, hasn't it, where people have kind of, communities have risen up and said, we're not having that?
Yeah.
And do you think that's going to impact on future when things get back to whatever normal will be?
I think it is. I think particularly for primary testing over the last number of years has just got absolutely ridiculous. You know, we were due to have the new early years testing or checking. Got key stage. We got year one phonics checking. You've got year two SATs and phonics checking if they didn't pass year one. You've got year four times table checks. You've got year six SATs. It's just an absolute nonsense. You know, we don't need it. And we're going to have gone through 2 years now without them because they've been cancelled for this year. So, and that puts so much stress on teachers and particularly on pupils worrying about SATs and various things. And we need to sort of really, as a profession, push against that and focus on wellbeing. Because, you know, that's the biggest priority for kids moving on to secondary school and beyond into adulthood, that if they've got enough strategies and toolbox strategies to sort of survive the stresses of life, then they're gonna be better adults and work better and less mental health issues. But, you know, we need to take the stress away from the schools as much as possible.
Can I ask?
I'm just going to butt in because a couple of the comments that a couple of the comments are saying even some of the teachers don't want to see themselves on the screen. Which I find, you know, I'm like, do my hair, make sure I've got something decent on top. I might be just in my, you know, boxers or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, it's a thing for everybody. You know, it's like hearing your own voice on a voicemail, isn't it? Or like the old-fashioned hand machines or something like that. Some people don't like all that. So it's not just, it doesn't just affect kids, it can affect teachers as well.
Oh, absolutely. You imagine when you're in your classroom, you've got your 30 children, you might have another adult, and that's, it's your little domain. But when you're broadcasting into, you know, we're doing year group Zooms so often, so you've got potentially 60 families watching you teach.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't know who's watching.
You don't. And there's a lot of that. And lockdown one, lots of schools didn't do the live stuff because we were still getting used to it. Can we use Zoom? Can we not? Are we allowed to? Are we not? Now it's almost an expectation that live lessons take place. And it's a completely different set of skills and approaches. So it's hard.
Can I ask, we've not particularly focused in on adoption, and I think that makes perfect sense, because I think I was reflecting that the vulnerabilities of our children are sort of here, you know, at this level, and almost like the rest of the world has caught up with us in some regards. We've had to kind of, the tools that we were using for a lot of those vulnerable children, we're then now sort of applying further out afield. So does that kind of, your thoughts on that? But also, what are your thoughts on the next 3 or 4 years? What do you think, are we in a position where children will be behind, left behind? Or do you think we will just catch up, that something that will, teachers will find a way?
A lot of the curriculum cycles. So, you know, if you've got in primary, you know, the first unit in the autumn term in maths is always place value. You know, it's every year you just do a little bit more. So you'll just fill those gaps and then build on it quicker. They will. I'm not worried about the children's learning. I'm not, from a head teacher's point of view. You know, a lot of the learning that takes place in schools is not optional, but one school will do one unit of learning, another school will do a different history unit, so that they're not missing out, because they're just different. It's just different learning. I look at stories of children that have come from war-torn countries with no language, and they get 9 GCSEs, you know. And any child with the right support from the school and with a bit of encouragement from family will close those gaps. We try not to use the term gaps in school in terms of this lockdown. We're talking about a pause. We're just having a little pause and then we'll crack on, you know? And we'll prioritise wellbeing, and we'll prioritise the children wanting to be in school and happy, because they're the kids that will then learn more rapidly when we do teach them the stuff they need to know. So they haven't got all this stuff in their head where they're not really listening anyway, therefore there's no point. So,
because one of the reflections,
and do you think that applies to high schools as well?
I think it's really challenging with a high school because of the curriculum content they've got to get through for the exams. I know, obviously, we've got the exams cancelled, but it's just been said that they'll be having external mini exams now in England, that the teachers will be set from the exam boards. So there's still all that pressure there, but you can only do what you can do. You can only learn what you've been taught, and you can only do in a certain amount of revision. So just work as hard as you can and aim to get the results that you need to get you to the next stage. Everyone's in the same boat.
We plan to only do 45 minutes, but I'm happy to keep going till 9 if that's okay, because I think that there's a real massive engagement. One of the questions I was wanting, if you're okay with that,
That's fine. I've only got a bit of port weight.
Well, just bring the port in. It's fine. You're amongst friends.
I'm drinking wine. I'm about to text my older son and tell him to top my wine glass.
Do you think that remote learning has actually worked? I've got anecdotal evidence to say it has, but would you say that remote working is actually working for some kids better?
Yes, for some kids, schools are the stress.
Yeah.
So for some kids, this is fantastic opportunity to be out of school for a bit, and do some learning if you are, and not if you're not. But yeah, you've got to remember schools are full of stress, and for a lot of kids, it's really, really difficult to place to get up every day and go to school. So for some, it's a bit of a relief. But in terms of remote learning, is it working? I think where you've got the system set up, where you've got technology set up, where you can keep children engaged and it's fun, yes, I think the learning can continue. You know, and play-based stuff. I mean, I'm talking primary because that's where my specialism is. You know, we've purchased loads of primary apps and interventions, apps that the children are doing regularly, and we know the children that have done that have made rapid progress. So yes, I'm not overly worried. I'm worried about certain children, but you know, but we know who they are. You know, we can support them in other ways. They've got different priorities. So, you know, the priority for me with children at home is their well-being and the relationships they've got with their parents. And then if the learning is on top of that, then brilliant.
Well, you read that question, and I'll tell you an anecdote.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a long question.
That's a big question. I know anecdotally of a couple of young people in foster care who school, they were academically bright, but school, like you say, was just not necessarily a stressful, but an environment that they couldn't flourish in, so they would be like the class clown, constantly getting asked to leave. Not nasty, not malicious, not malicious behaviour, but just really just disruptive, low-level disruption. The minute lockdown came on, the foster carer said, right, well, if you think you're going to sit and play on your Xbox, you've hadn't got another thing coming. They were in the GCSE year. And they said, basically, you're going to do exactly the work that you're meant to be doing. His grades skyrocketed because he was just taking... He wasn't given an option, but also that's kind of that crucial. So his predicted grades just went up and up and up, and just it was... It kind of saved him at the critical moment where his grades were going one way. Another anecdote is a child who's kind of, you know, not a particularly troublesome child, not, you know, no issues, but actually just got to be at home with their parents for 6 months and play and relax. Yeah. Didn't do much academic work. But then anecdotally that their confidence has built and so their academic work's improving.
So much, you know, I think the question that we've got there, it's really important, you know, especially if you've had a child where they're a bit older, you've not had that full, you don't necessarily get both. If you've got two parents, you might get a couple of weeks paternity leave or maternity leave. To have that extra time where you can bond and do fun things, learn about each other. And even children seeing you working from home, and what a job looks like, you know, they don't get to see that. So my kids have seen me work from home at times and see what I have to do and go, oh God, you actually have to do quite a lot of work. You know, are you in another meeting? It brings them a world of work into the home. What's the question there? Any training that may be useful to pass on for our child's one-to-one that she could do on the days we don't send our daughter in? Oh, okay. So actually access to training. There's quite a few bits of training providers out there. I know PAC UK do a good online training for one-to-ones and schools, which I think is only about 30. I'm not advertising them, by the way. But I think it's only about 35 quid, which is an attachment and trauma training. So, you know, that's a good one to access, I would say, for them to really understand a little bit about what the kids need.
Excellent. I shall take that down.
So you can actually put them up, pal. Sorry, I feel like I'm taking away from the podcast, but you know.
No, I am. I'm putting up what goes on site.
Oh, your talents are just endless.
Really clever, isn't it?
Days. Seriously, this is just all new to me, honestly.
Look, responsive. Look, that was.
Oh. Yeah. You're welcome, Rachel. That's why we invited you on.
Very clever. Hello, Sarah.
Oh, you know, Sarah, she's one of your fans, obviously. Many, many ladies.
BBC Bite Size is very good as well, and Oak Academy stuff's really good for home learning.
Well, that's really interesting as well, isn't it? Because last time, and bearing in mind, I do live in a different country, which we should make clear, and the Ireland were quite on it last time. They did children's programmes for certain kind of ages and stuff. But in the UK, now, bearing in mind, when I were a lad, and Stuart, I think you're roughly the same age as me. Al's a lot older. But we had things on the BBC and on Channel 4 and stuff, and they used to bring the telly in on its big wheels in the school.
Oh, yeah.
Red Diffusion.
The Boys from Space, Dark Towers.
Exactly, yeah. How We Used to Live. That's the one I remember, How We Used to Live, because I used to love that programme. That was the one that they used to... Anyway, should we be dependent on things like... the BBC, you know, all these television channels to step up, or should we, you know, what's your thoughts there? I'm not asking you to, you know, pull you in the long grass. I'm just asking you what you think about that, because it's all very well shown a programme, but it's an interpretation of something rather than education, isn't it? Is it?
I think as many different people that can provide different things that kids can access, then the better. You know, if they can't access what the school can provide, at least they can watch something on the telly that is often loads of learning. My kids have learned so much from Octonauts over the years. I mean, do you know what a siphonophore is, Scott?
A what?
Siphonophore. There you go. You'll have grown-ups in here who've got kids of that age that know what a siphonophore is, because they've watched that. And things like Go-Getters for geography is fantastic. You know, it's that knowledge that you can get from some of these programs that is absolutely brilliant. But you've also got all of these people that have been creative online. You've got Draw with Rob. You've got our little art classes going on. You've got the dance classes with some of the Strictly people. All of these.
Drink with Scott.
Add to it all.
I said drink with Scott.
Drink with Scott. It's the new feature.
Sorry.
I'm leaving.
No. But I think you raise a valid point. I think it's all supplementing knowledge, isn't it? And it's adding from a different direction. It's just it's creating a smorgasbord where children can,
which we need,
learn.
We need, because they're not all going to, you know, we say it about the classroom, don't we? That children will never all learn the same way. So why would that be any different from sitting in front of a screen?
Yeah.
You know, it's exactly the same, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know which kids are going to struggle with that. So you set them something different.
Yeah. And in response to Rachel M's thing, she said she took people to watch you at a conference, and I just wanted to say I took you to a conference, Stuart, and you know, everybody listened to you there as well. That's why we have Stuart on the old podcast, loves.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I do training for schools, and I do that either remote or face to face. So, you know, I do go around the country doing that training. So
stick on your blog, and
people can stick it on my blog. Know where I am.
Sorry, we're reading questions at the same time when there's a break in the conversation.
I think it's picking up on you were saying you're not knowing what nouns are and things. You know, parents need to be looking up stuff really quickly to try to work out what it is. You know, and it is hard, you know.
I really
feel for a lot of parents out there at the moment, particularly those that are trying to work with children that have got those additional needs, and they're possibly trying to work from home at the same time.
And I mean, let's face it, it's hard being a parent anyway, isn't it? You know, I saw something the other day online, you know, someone, how we used to do maths, so, you know, the I think it was multiplication or adding or whatever, and then you look at how it's done these days, and so many different options, and it's like, you know, I remember number lines when my kids were at primary school, and I was like, this is how you do it, you know. It's totally taken over but that's just part of being a parent, surely.
It's part of trying to learn all the new stuff.
Can I ask a question, and it's really flippant and irrelevant, But I'm going to dig in because it's our podcast. When will we phase out Chip and Biffer?
Biff, Chip and Kipper?
Yes.
Never.
Right.
Never. No. A lot of schools don't use them now, to be fair. But do you know they're
I'm
not
a man broken.
They're not. How do you know they're not their real names?
I'm broken by them.
Chip isn't even his real name. Biff isn't the name. They're actually, that's not their proper names. But there you go.
Either of you are talking about, to be fair. So.
I would leave that for your watchers and listeners to find out what their actual names are.
No. I've been going to the same primary school. I worked this out, Stuart. So my first daughter went there in 1999, and I've ever had a child every single year since. Right, so that's 21 years I've been going to the same primary school. I've been a governor for 6 years. They've built a new building. There's actual teachers there who weren't born when I started to take children to the school. I am a man broken. They need to give me a gold medal because she's going to leave in 2 years and I am going to dance away from the place. Bless them. I do like them. But
then are your grandchildren not going to be going there as well?
Shut up.
You'll still have to go, won't you?
No, she couldn't get a place there. I was so relieved.
So
anyway, we're way off point.
Yeah, we are going off because I was going to ask you a question about whether it's called the wing, the Alcoats MBE wing, but I thought they're not.
The Alcoats Memorial Water Fountain.
Oh, dear me. Right, so, Stuart, before we finish up, I just wanted to say, they're all answering this question about who's who now.
Yeah.
But I just wanted you to kind of give a message to parents or any teachers that are watching, really, in terms of, you know, how should we feel? What should, you know, what would you say to any parents, any teachers who are watching, who are, you know, doing this, whether they're adopted or not, it makes no difference. You know, it's about the situation that we're all in. What would your advice be, or your kind of?
I think my takeaway is to recognise that this is a very difficult but very temporary situation. We will get through this, and we won't be doing this for years and years on end. It will go. If you think about it, you know, March, when we first went into this, is nine odd months ago, and that's gone. We've covered that 9 months, you know, and in another 9 months time, we hopefully won't be anywhere like this again. But to take care of yourself as teachers, as children, as parents, we have to keep a really close check on how we're doing ourselves. If you feel you're starting to get edgy, you've got to do something at that point, because otherwise that's going to transfer onto your children and you're going to be in a mess again. So just take care of yourself. Step back if you need to, okay? It doesn't matter with the learning. Yeah. For that day, even that week, if you need to do something else, just do it, you know. But keep your routines as much as possible. Keep the self-care. Put all your little nice things for your kids. Bring them a drink with a biscuit. You know, make them a hot chocolate. You know, do all the sort of the nice things, and just see it from their perspective as well, that this is really tough with not being with their friends. Just keep a good open dialogue, and, you know, have those nice cuddle times when you need to.
Oh, can't beat that.
I wish my
advice,
children were of an age where I could have a cuddle, but, you know, whatever. Any more questions, Al, before we finish off?
I think it's been a busy one. It has. I think this has probably been our most well attended webcast. Sarah Warrington says, if a child is struggling with school and has a few other issues, should the school step in to help under pupil premium, or when should they be referred to SEN for an assessment?
Yeah, great question, because you obviously got the pupil premium issue as well. But as I said in one of my first ever blogs about pupil premium, it's a bit of a red herring. For me, any child that needs some help should get the help. So I think if you feel your child is struggling, the first thing we'll do is find that person in school, whether it's the teacher or the SENCO, whoever it might be. to have that conversation and just say, you know, this, I feel that they're really struggling with this. And they'll either go, do you know what? On the recent assessment, they're all right. Or they might go, yeah, they are. You might want to try this, this, and this. But just have that dialogue. If they are pupil premium, then the school should be doing as much as they can to give that extra support. But as I said, it's a red herring. There's lots of children with lots of different needs at the moment, whether they're pupil premium, not pupil premium. Just to have that conversation. Have the conversation with school. Start the dialogue.
Fab. Thank you. So on that note, we are going to bid farewell to our live viewers. Stuart, thank you so much for coming on tonight. I really appreciate it. Hopefully the next time we have you back, it won't be anything to do with this at all. And we can talk about normal things.
As much as we can in our situations.
Exactly, yeah.
Al? Thank you so much. No, I was just going to say thank you so much. Everything's been great. So thank you, and I'll bid you a fond farewell.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.